And let us begin our teleconference on how to negotiate the best deal. One of the things that I've learned over the course of my lifetime, and I started off unable to negotiate at all, and I didn't know why I was always getting the worst deal. And then I finally realized the number one reason that we don't negotiate well is because of fear of rejection. We're afraid that people are going to say no, and they're going to turn us down, and then we'll feel bad. This goes back to early childhood. So one of the things you have to realize is in negotiating, rejection is not personal. If people tell you no, it doesn't mean anything, and in many cases, it doesn't even mean a final no. But the rule is, before you ask, the answer is always no. The one thing that we know is that everybody is motivated to get the very, very best deal for themselves under every circumstance, in every situation. And everybody feels that they are smarter and better than the other person. So negotiating is a constant competition. Interestingly enough, the whole quality of your life is determined by how good a negotiator you are. The rule is that over the course of your lifetime, you can save or gain about 20% of all the money that goes through your hands, in or out, if you can negotiate well in your own behalf. If you were to take that amount of money that you could gain or save and invest it at compound interest, everybody listening could become a millionaire. And so that's one of our goals, is to make sure that you get the very, very highest price when you sell, get the very lowest price when you buy. Now, I personally have negotiated many millions of dollars worth of contracts, probably more than $100 million worth over the years. I have negotiated for companies. I've been a negotiator for municipalities and for corporations. I have negotiated myself against an entire negotiating team of a multi-jillion dollar company and come out with the check and been successful. And the reason is not because I'm a great negotiator. It's because I've studied some of the techniques and tactics that we're talking about here today. Now, in preparing for this, I was thinking, you know, there's two types of negotiating, and we'll go back and forth between them. The first type of negotiating is what I call personal negotiating. Personal negotiating is where you negotiate in your own behalf. All you want is to get the very highest price for what you're selling or pay the very least amount for what you're buying. And if you never see the other person again, it doesn't really matter. Right? This happens with any kind of consumer product, homes, cars, furniture, and so on. The other type of negotiating is business negotiating. Now, in business negotiating, what we find is that if you play it properly, if you do it right, you'll often end up negotiating with that same person, doing business with that same person, means the same thing, for years and years and years. One of my biggest clients, a client that I have earned many millions of dollars from over the years, I've been in ongoing negotiations with them for 20 years this year. And negotiations go on every year. And it's always new projects and new processes and new businesses and new amounts and so on. But they go on forever. So in business negotiating, you want to establish a relationship such that you can go back to that person. You can continually go back because the quality of the relationship, even though you were a good negotiator, has not been harmed. Some years ago, I was doing a seminar. I had about 1,000 people in it. And in the seminar, we're talking about negotiating. I said, let me tell you how to negotiate the purchase of an automobile, because purchasing a car is something that is very important to us. Afterwards, I was literally chased down the street by car salespeople. 35 car salespeople who happened to be in the seminar, I didn't know that, demanded their money back. They threatened to sue me. And they were saying, how dare you tell people these tricks and techniques about buying a car? Do you realize how much that will hurt our business? And so I want to tell you just a quick story about negotiating the purchase of a car, and we'll kind of loop back into this later. Once upon a time, my wife needed a new car. She had decided that the car that she wanted to get. And we did our research, checked all over the place, and found pretty much what these cars were selling for. As it happens, I used to import and sell Japanese vehicles, so I know how much they're marked up. I know how much profit the dealer makes, almost to the percentage point. So I had some really good information going in. So we went to the dealership, and we walked in, and we looked at different cars, and we picked a car that she wanted. It was exactly right, inside, outside, size, everything else. And the saleswoman came up and said, you like the car? We said, yes, we're interested in buying that car. Oh, she said, well, good, well, come on. So they take you into the closing room, and they sit down, and she said, and this is really interesting because this was a very hot car at the time, very popular. I said, how much is it? She said, well, the actual price, the factory list price on this car is $26,900. But she said, because they are so popular and because it's fully loaded, we charge $28,900 as our base price. But what we like to get And I still remember that. But what we'd like to get is actually $30,900. So the price is $30,900. And I said, well, and I'd already told my friends who had done the research with me, my wife, my partner, and a friend of mine were all there. I said, don't give any facial expressions at all in this negotiation. Don't respond to anything. So they said $30,900. I said, well, okay. I said, now I've sold, bought and sold Japanese cars before. I know how much profit is involved in this. I know what is a good deal for you. If the list price is $26,900, that means that you're going to be making about $5,000, $6,000 profit on that. So what I'll do is I will trade sort of halfway for that, and I will make you a one-time offer, fully loaded, everything included, for $24,000. And that includes taxes, pre-delivery, inspection, everything, $24,000, and I'll write a check today. And I want you to understand that this is a yes or no offer. This is not a talk about it, think about it, so on. It's yes or no. You just tell me yes or no, and if you say no, then I'll understand. I'll go and buy it somewhere else. And she said, well, that's absolutely impossible. That price is far too low. We've never sold a car like this. This is a very, very popular car. We couldn't possibly do that. She went on, and I said, well, you take it to your sales manager and see what happens. So she went two offices over to her sales manager, and we could kind of see. And she took it in, and she showed the sales manager. So the sales manager's face opened up. You could see him saying, what? Must be crazy. And then he looked over at us, and he had this kind of sort of cunning look on his face. Aha, this is going to be easy pickings. So he wrote down a few figures, gave it back to her, and she came back and she said, well, my sales manager really, really wants to do this deal, and we are going to cut the price from what we would like to get, and we're going to give it to you at $29,900. And I said, okay. I said, well, thank you very much. And I said, okay, everybody ready? And everybody was ready. And without a single word, we got up and walked out. And we walked down the hallway, and we're walking out toward our car, and we walked past the sales manager, and he's sitting there looking at me, and he's looking at the saleswoman who's running up behind us, and he comes running out, and he said, where are you going? I said, we're leaving. He said, well, what do you mean you're leaving? He said, well, we made you an offer. You said no, so we're going somewhere else. He said, well, wait a minute. He said, wait a minute. Have you ever bought a car before? You don't seem to know how to buy a car. And I said, yes, we bought lots of cars. He said, well, you just don't seem to know what's involved in buying a car. Now just don't walk off like this. He said, come and sit down. Let's take another look at these numbers. So we said, all right, went back and sat down, completely passive, like the Chinese face, completely impassive, not a single word. And they went back and forth and back and forth. Finally, they said, well, we can give it to you at the price that we sell everything at. It's $26,900. And I said, okay, thank you very much. Got up and walked out again. We did this about four or five times. It was the most amazing thing. We got to our car. We were in our car once when they came running out and had us come back inside, sit down, and went over the numbers. And they became more and more pained, almost like we were pulling their teeth without anesthetic. I want to ask you, my friends on this conference call, can you guess what price we walked away with that car with, brand new, everything loaded, all in, one number? And I will tell you the answer was $24,000. And as we drove away with the car, they were standing there and they were shaking their head and they're looking at us. And the last thing he said to me, he says, you know, you just know nothing about buying cars. You know nothing about buying cars. As if I had perpetrated a great fraud and I just drove away. But I got my car for $24,000. Now, there's a lot of different factors involved in this story. It's a true story. I bought lots of cars this way. When I told people that this is the way that you buy cars, car salespeople were absolutely furious with me. Because they said, that's no way. If you tell people like that, it'll cost us a fortune, especially if it gets out. Now, here's the rule, is your ability to negotiate well on your own behalf is instrumental to your success. And the fact is that everything is negotiable. This is one of the great rules of success. Everything is negotiable. In other words, even if the price is written down, even if it's engraved in stone, remember, every price is plucked out of the air. Every price is made up by somebody. Every price that is fixed by somebody can be changed by somebody if you can go high enough up the totem pole. So when you go into a store and you say, that price is too high, they say, well, that's the price, because they have no authority to lower the price. So what you do is you keep going uphill. One of the things I found that in many companies, if you can go to the sales manager, you say, could I speak to the sales manager, please? Or could I speak to the supervisor, please? Or could I speak to the owner, please? The higher up you can go, the more authority they have to negotiate the price. I'll give you another example. It was about February. It was a cold winter. And I went to a very expensive menswear store. This was some years ago, as you can imagine. And they had a beautiful cashmere overcoat. And the list price on it was $500. It was set up on a rack. It was a beautiful store. Silver, gold, chrome, everything else. But it was about $500. and they had marked it down to $400. And they said, this is a really good price. I said, well, you know what I'd like to pay for that? I'd say I'd like to pay $250 for that, because I know you have about a 100-150% markup in these clothes. I said, it's February, it's toward the end of the winter, and your chances of selling it have gone down. It fits me, it's not going to fit everybody that comes in, so I'll give you $250, take it or leave it. And the salesperson said, that's outrageous. Do you know what store this is? We don't negotiate prices in this store. The price is what the price is. I mean, that's a very good price already. I said, I'll tell you what. I gave him my business card. I said, is your sales manager here? He said, no, he's not here. He's gone for lunch. I said, I'll tell you what. You take my business card, and I wrote on the back, $250, valid until 3 p.m. I said, you give this to your sales manager, and if he wants to sell it to me, you can call me on that number. And if you don't call, then that'll be fine with me. I'll go somewhere else. He said, absolutely not. There's no way. I'll give it to my sales manager, but there's no way we would ever negotiate a price like this. 3:10, I'm sitting in my office, the phone rings, and here's the salesman with a baffled sound in his face. I don't understand. He said, I just don't understand, but my sales manager told me to call you and give it to you for $250. I said, well, thank you very much. I'll be over a little bit later. And I picked it up. It was an absolutely beautiful coat, and I got it for literally half price. And so these are another technique, and here's the second point I want to make, is not only is everything negotiable, but the key to negotiating is to ask for what you want. It's not a big deal, but just ask for what you want. Ask for more when you're selling, ask for less when you're buying, and if you don't get the right answer, ask again, and then ask again. And I always say the key to success is asking. The future belongs to the askers. So what you do is you ask positively and you ask politely, and they say, well, this is the price, and you say, well, could I get it at a better price than that? Could I get it at a lower price than that? That's an awful lot to charge. And they look at you with some surprise. They say, well, no. They say, well, are you sure I couldn't get it at a lower price? In other words, don't be afraid to ask. And don't worry about the rejection. Remember, the rejection is just all a game. And what you do is you keep asking, and you ask confidently, and you ask courteously, and you ask repeatedly, and you ask smilingly, and you ask charmingly, and you just ask. You ask your way to success, and don't let the fear of rejection hold you back. Now, let me just flip over with regard to business negotiating. In business negotiating, the purpose in a business negotiation is to reach an agreement such that all parties are satisfied and willing to do business again. Now, this is a very important definition. It's not to win so badly that the other person is so angry that they'll never do business with you again. Because there's an interesting thing about a business negotiation, especially if it requires a contract and the party of the first part does this and the party of the second part does that. What happens is if the party of the first part or the second part doesn't like the deal, in retrospect, feels that they have been pressured into something that is really not in their best interest, they simply don't go through with the deal. They drag their feet on it. They don't fulfill the order. They may sign the agreement under duress, but in retrospect, they just become very difficult to deal with. Let me give you an example. I distribute my programs through various companies. And most, if not all, companies have a standard royalty agreement. That means that for every audio program or cassette, they pay a specific amount per cassette. And if you're Tom Peters or you're Tony Robbins or Zig Ziglar or Brian Tracy, you all get exactly the same amount. The only difference is the volume of sales, which changes the amount that you get. Well, I was talking to the president of a company that was doing business with this company, and they had sold them one of their programs to distribute. And this guy was a very tough negotiator. He was a hard case. He told me there's no way they were going to take the same kind of deal that these other people take. No way. He ground them down. He got twice as much. And he was telling me about how successful he was in finally getting these people to agree to pay them far more than they'd ever paid anybody else. And I said, wow, that's quite interesting. And I was a little bit concerned. I mean, I'm thinking, geez, am I getting a bad deal because I'm not negotiating hard enough? So later I spoke to the president of the company that they'd negotiated with, and I said, what about this? And he said, that's right, we did enter into that agreement. He said, but we have never sold or distributed a single one of their products, and they'll never earn a penny from us. They have an agreement that's effectively useless. So therefore, your goal is always when you negotiate in business, where you may be negotiating with that person again, is to enter into an agreement such that it's fair, that the other person feels that it's reasonable, that both people are happy. My friend Stephen Covey says, you know, there's five different types of negotiating. There's win-lose, where you win and the other person loses. There's lose-win, where you lose and the other person wins. which happens too often. And then there's lose-lose, where both of you end up unhappy. And then there's no deal, where both of you walk away. And then the fifth kind is win-win. Win-win is where both people get enough so that they're happy. They don't get everything they want, but win-win leads to subsequent deals. And I have always been very adamant in business to work on a win-win basis. And I'll talk about this later, but sometimes you'll enter into an agreement that will seem like a good agreement. And then in retrospect, you'll find something out and you think, geez, you know, this is not a good deal because I hadn't thought about this. Or they will have the same feeling and they'll come back to you. And in either case, I always say, look, we hadn't thought about that. So even though we've signed the agreement, let's just change it so we're both happy. Because being happy in a business agreement is important. If you enter into happy business agreements with other people, you leave a trail behind you in your business life. And people learn that dealing with you is a good thing to do. Is that when you enter into an agreement, you're fair. And at the end of the agreement, or in the middle of the agreement, if it needs to be changed, you're fair. And that you always follow through in your agreements. As a sub-issue with regard to being in business, your word, your honor, your integrity is the most precious and valuable thing that you ever have. And Napoleon Hill once said, you can tell how much you value your word when it costs you money to fulfill your promises. Very often we get into a deal that turns out to be a bad deal. Man, it costs us money, but remember, your word is more important than the money, and it will never be forgotten. Which brings us to a difference between what we call the Chinese way of negotiating, the Asian way of negotiating, and the American-European way of negotiating. I have negotiated countless contracts with the Japanese, with the Chinese, Taiwanese, with Hong Kong, Singapore, and so on. And what I have found is that there's such a thing as a Chinese contract. And I have now begun using this with all of my businesses. And we will enter negotiation. We will draw it all up. We'll have the lawyers write it up. And I'll say, now, I believe in the Chinese contract approach to negotiate. And here's what it is. An American contract has steel sides. It's written up, it's engraved in stone, you sign it, and if there's any deviation, if there's any breach, if you like, then you sue, and you become very angry. Chinese contract is a little different. What they do is they write up the agreement, but instead of the agreement having hard edges, it has soft edges, very much like a cloud. And what this means is they use this agreement as their basis, their working agreement. This is how much you'll pay, how much you'll receive. However, if they get new information, they're open to modifying the agreement with new information. So the agreement is a living agreement. Every time I talk to my business partners, and I'm involved in over 20 different real estate projects right now, I have a business interest in about 17 countries. I have over 400 products. I have books, tapes, courses. I have clients, tenants. I'm involved in negotiating all the time. Whenever I explain this to people, they say, that sounds incredible. I said, yes, so let's agree on what we can agree on, but then let's look upon it as a Chinese contract. So that if we get new information that shows that what we've agreed to is not fair to either one of us, we'll go back and reopen it. What do you think about that? And they all say, that's a great idea. I love that idea. So what I want to do is I want to pass that on to you, is when you're doing an agreement, remember there will always be new things that happen that will maybe necessitate reopening the agreement, maybe not. But when you encourage people, you say, I believe in a Chinese contract because I always want you to be happy, just like I want to be happy. And so if ever something new comes up, then let's talk about it. And you'll be amazed at the power this has in getting people to agree with you. Well, let's move on a little bit. One of the things that we know in negotiating is that power is a critical element. Power is very, very important. And it's not just power, it's perceived power. In other words, who's got the power in the negotiation? And there are several different types of power that I want to tell you about. Michael Korda wrote a book about the different forms of power you can develop. And your job is to develop as many of them as possible before you enter into the negotiation. I'll give you a quick example. Victor Kiam, who bought Remington. Remember, he was famous. He died recently. And he said, I like the company so much, I bought it. Remington was up for sale. Kiam was a very successful businessman, sales marketer, involved in a lot of things in New York. He heard the company was up for sale. The people who had the major shareholders' interest wanted to get out. They were tired of the hassles. The company sales were down and so on. And so he went to them, and he very cleverly, they wanted something like $150 million. So he went to them, and he suggested that he would pay them $150 million. However, he would like to do it over an extended period of time on a workout agreement so that they would be paid as he generated profits and revenues. And they said, absolutely not. And so he said, well, you think about that because I think that this is the surest way that you can get your money. You still maintain ownership of the company until it's paid off. I have a vested incentive to make sure that it's successful. And you know that I'm a competent person. I can do this. So you don't have any other buyers. I know I've checked in the market. So think about it. Well, eventually they came back to him, took about 6 to 9 months, and sold him the $150 million company, and they financed it themselves. Basically, they took back the paper on the company. So he bought Remington for $150 million, whatever the amount was, made it a very successful company. They got their money back, and everyone was happy. Well, one day, another company that sold a product that Remington could carry, quite a successful product, the owner approached him and said he'd like to sell out to Kayam, and he wanted $5 million for his company. And his company was a great company, highly successful, profitable, big sales, and everything else. Well, here's the rule. Nobody ever sells a successful company. Nobody ever sells a profitable business. If the business is profitable, people don't sell it. They get somebody else to manage it. So therefore, if anybody ever wants to sell you a business, in 9 out of 10 cases, the business is not profitable. You just don't know where, how, why it's not profitable. Your job is to find out. So Victor Kayam talks about calling around town, calling his own banker. His banker called another banker who knew somebody else from school who was the banker of this company they were attempting to sell to him for $5 million. And he said, what do you know about the company? He said, the company's in serious trouble. Their major creditors are about to pull their plug. If they pull the plug, the company will go into receivership. This guy is desperate. He has no further credit because he has not fulfilled his obligations in the past, so nobody will lend him any more money. And you could probably get a very good deal with him. So armed with this information, Victor Kayam went back to the young fellow who wanted $5 million for his company and offered him nothing. And he offered him a payout. He said, what I'll do is I'll give you $2 million, but I'll give you $2 million on the basis of this. And this is that these sales will take place, that these contracts will stay in place, that these payments will be made, that these sort of benchmarks will be reached, and so on. And the fellow ended up walking away from his company without a penny, and Victor Kayam got the company on the come for $2 million rather than $5 million because he had the first form of power, which is what we call expertise or superior knowledge of the subject. He had taken the time to find out everything that was possible about the person he was negotiating with before he met with them for the serious negotiation. There's an old saying that you've heard, in the land of the blind, one eye is king. In the land of the blind, one eye is king. What that means is that in negotiating, if you know just one factor, that factor alone can give you the deal. If you just have one factor in the back of your mind, that can give you the deal. I'll give you an example. When we moved to San Diego, we went out and bought a house. We then applied for a mortgage. But because we had not lived in California before, we might as well have lived on Mars because no matter how much income we had or credit, nobody would pay any attention to us. We moved into the house. We paid a very large amount. The owner moved out, and we applied for mortgage after mortgage to close the sale. And we couldn't find someone. It would be people that are in like a lion, out like a lamb, and so on. Not like today. And by the way, you could mortgage anything today. So finally, we went to one of the best companies in San Diego, and it was getting toward the end of the year, and I read an article in the Wall Street Journal saying, at the end of the year, all the bonuses are paid to people in financial services, especially mortgage, savings and loan, banks, and so on. So they're very, very eager to get points on the board at the end of the year. So we went to them in December, and they dragged and they dragged, and they went back and forth and asked for this and that and so on. And as we got closer to the end of December, we just took a deep breath and just were patient. And suddenly, in the last 10 days of the month, this is a $500,000 mortgage, last 10 days of the month, suddenly everything went into gear. It's like all the engines went on, like a starting race at the drag car. Suddenly all the engines went on, and they went into overtime, and they raced. And it was absolutely amazing. Phone call, back, forth, messenger, and so on. They had to close that sale by December 31st. In order to get it into that year so they qualify for the big bonuses that were possible. And a $500,000 sale apparently was enough to put somebody over the top. So what we did, knowing that at the end of the year, the end of December, that they were going for their year-end bonuses and they were cutting corners to get there, we just were patient and we got the mortgage, we got a great rate, it worked out perfectly and so on. One piece of information can give you a tremendous deal. Now today, the very best source of information in the whole world is the internet. You should never go into a negotiation, whether it's a mortgage, buying a house, a home, a car, selling anything, without going onto the internet and finding out what other people are charging, what other people are paying. So, superior knowledge of your subject gives you the power of expertise. When you walk in and it's clear that you've done your homework, you know what is available. I bought a car recently and I went onto the internet. I knew exactly what I wanted in a car. I pulled down all the cars, had my staff do it, something like 12 or 15 cars within 50 miles that fitted the profile of the car that I wanted. And I call up every single one of them to find out exactly what was in the car, how many miles, condition, everything else. By the time I'd finished and I called the company that I eventually bought from, within 1 minute the guy knew that I knew everything about this car. I knew who had it for sale, what they were selling for. I mean, I knew more than he did about the car, and it changed his attitude completely. When I went in that evening to buy the car, I got one of the very best deals you could imagine. I got a $68,000 car, fully loaded GPS system for $44,000. And he was very happy to do the deal because he knew I knew what else was available within 50 miles. So the second type of power, the first power is the power of expertise. The second power is the knowledge of the needs of the other. And the key here is ask. Ask what they need. Do your research. Do your questioning. One of the greatest questions in a negotiation is you can ask, if this discussion, never say negotiation, if this discussion works out perfectly, what would you like to have happen? What would you like to have happen? What would be your ideal? And it's absolutely amazing. I've gone into negotiation sessions that have been scheduled for 3 hours, and I ask this question at the beginning, ideally, what would you like to get out of this discussion? They say, well, ideally, we'd like to get this. I say, well, ideally, we'd like to get this, and we're not too far apart. What if we saw it off right here? And they say, yeah, we'll do that. And we concluded a three-hour negotiation in 15 minutes. Because often people will tell you straight, this is what we want. And you say, great. And if you've done some research and questioning and found out what else is available, the greater the knowledge you have of the needs of the other person, the more power you have. And sometimes the very best way to find out their needs is to ask them. Or another way, like Victor Kiam did, is found out through their banker what their needs were and so on. Now, the third form of power you can develop is called identification. Identification is based on empathy, or what we call liking. The more a person likes you, the better deal you're going to get. And it's one of the reasons why you see stories in the television and movies about real tough negotiators that are really hard and sharp, like card players and so on. But you'll find that the very best negotiators are very easygoing. They're very relaxed, they're very warm, they're very friendly. Sometimes these people are brought in halfway around the world. They come into the room to settle a major international negotiation, missile negotiations or major labor union contracts, and they think that you're going to bring in a hired gun like the outlaw Josie Wales with guns and knives and everything else. And the person who comes in is just a real nice person. Nice man, nice woman, low-keyed, friendly, warm, genial, completely unflappable. And people just relax in his or her presence. And so his whole personality is such that people identify with him and they like him. And unconsciously, they lose their desire to win, and they just kind of feel like they want to do a deal here. So here's one of the most powerful identification statements you can make, is when a person says, I want this and I want that, and sometimes people will come on very aggressively, you say, you know, I understand how you feel, or I understand where you're coming from, or I understand what you're trying to accomplish. Always say, I understand you. I understand your needs. I understand your situation. I understand why you feel that way. So I always say, I understand you feel that way. And I want you to get the best deal possible here. And I want me to get the best deal possible too. So what if we sort of compromised in this area? And then you kind of just talk very gently. But when you say, I understand, there's a book called Please Understand Me. And one of the points that they make is that what people want more than anything else in their lives is to be understood by at least one other person. The reason marriages stay together for so many years is because people feel there's nobody else who really understands me as well as this person. Usually, by the way, this is the man, because nobody ever understands women. Women are always trying to be better understood. But generally, the feeling of being understood is one of the most important things that you can do to develop empathy and liking between yourself and another person. Now, the fourth type of power you can develop is rewarding and punishing. Now, rewarding and punishing is called the carrot and stick method. The carrot and stick method is where you suggest that, you know, if you go ahead with this, you will have this sale. If you don't, this is what you won't have. For instance, one of the things I told the people in buying a car, I said that for the first 3 weeks of every month, car salespeople are very, very hard negotiators. Why? It's because they're not at quota time yet. The best time to buy a car, you do your research in the first 3.5 weeks, you buy a car in the last 3.5 days. Why? Is in the last 3.5 days, everybody's bonus is tied to quota. The last 3.5 days, they are scrambling to make those sales. They've got to get those sales in for the month, because if they want to qualify for quota. So what you do is you go in the 28th, 29th, 30th, and you're very low-keyed, very moderate, and you say, look, you know, it's coming up to the end of the month. I'm willing to buy on these terms. I've got approved credit. I can write you a check. If you take the deal, you've got a sale right now. If you don't, you don't, now go somewhere else and they'll get the sale. Carrot and stick, reward and punish. And you never wave it in their face. You just point out, you know, there's some real benefits for you to go ahead. If you take my offer, you've got a deal. If you don't take my offer, you know, how long will it take to sell? When I bought a very expensive home, I went out and I did all kinds of research in the marketplace. I found that it took an average of 9 months for a home like this to sell. I also found the person selling the home was in desperate financial straits. And so when I sat down to negotiate with him directly, I went around the real estate people. I said, normally a house like this takes about 6 to 9 months. He said, yes, it's about 9 months. He'd done his homework too. I said, I can make you a deal. It's not as much as you're asking for, but I can offer you this deal and I can offer to close it immediately. And then it's off your back. You don't have to worry about it again. And he said, well, let me think about it. He called me back at night. He said, we'll take the deal. Because a bird in the hand is worth several in the bush. Finally, the last form of power, now the fifth form, is called investment. And investment is where you put time, money, and emotion into buying something, or the other person puts time, money, and emotion into the buying. They take a long trip. They travel a great distance. They do a lot of research. They come back several times. When a person has invested an enormous amount in a negotiation, it can have two effects. First of all, it can make you far more committed to be successful. But on the other hand, it can make the other person far more receptive to the fact that you've invested so much time and trouble. So the greater the amount of investment, the greater the sense of obligation on both parties. Now, here's the next part of negotiating, and this is really important. And the rule is that emotions can help or hurt you in negotiating. Let me repeat that. Your emotions can help you or hurt you. There's two or three major emotions that enter into negotiating. The first is desire. Second is greed. And the third is anger. And it's really important if you become angry in a negotiation, you can often make all kinds of mistakes. This is one of the things that's causing problems in labor and management negotiations and negotiations in the Middle East, political negotiations, is once anger gets into a negotiation, it becomes very hard to do business. So your job is to make sure that there's very, very low fuse, that you're very calm, you never say anything, no matter how angry you get. Remember, the man who controls his anger controls the world. You know, Confucius said the person who's in control of himself is the person who controls everyone else. So desire, however, in negotiating for something is the critical element. So the question you have to ask if you're selling is, how badly does the other person want it? And the question you have to ask if you're buying is, how badly do you want it? Now, that's why I said when we bought the car, it's very important that you show no emotion. Afterwards, they said to my partner, they said, you know, it was completely unnerving selling you a car, because at no time did we ever know what you were thinking. None of you. None of you showed anything. There was no excitement on the face of my wife in getting the car. There was no negativity or reluctance. They said we just showed no emotion. And I've made many major purchases like that. Even buying in a flea market, buying in a bazaar, buying a refrigerator or a coat. Whatever you do, just be very pleasant. Don't smile. Don't be friendly. Just show no emotion at all. And look at it exactly as if you could not care less. And this unnerves people, especially if they're more eager to sell than you appear to be eager to buy. So emotional involvement reduces your power because it weakens you. And that's why sometimes with my wife and I going out buying something serious, I say, you've got to stay very calm. Or if I go out with my kids to buy a car, as we've done three times now, I say, you've got to stay very calm when you do this if you want to get the best deal. And this is also the same, by the way, with negotiating a piece of real estate or a home or something else. Remember, the bigger the price or the product, the more thousands of dollars there are that are going to end up in your pocket or in their pocket. Now, the next part of negotiating is time. Time can be a critical element in negotiating, and you've got to use time in your favor. The more pressing the need, the less effective is the negotiator. One of the stories I tell is back in early America, all of the fire departments were owned privately. And the firemen were volunteers who worked in the area around the fire department. So when there was a fire, they'd ring the bell, and all the volunteers would rush over from their nearby jobs, and they'd jump into the fire wagon and run out to the house. Then the owner of the fire wagon would negotiate with the homeowner whose house was on fire behind him for how much they're going to charge to put out the fire. And I can tell you, when your house is on fire, you don't have a lot of negotiating power. And this is what led, by the way, to them finally taking control of all fire departments under the government, because the owner of the fire department would negotiate at a point where the owner of the house, whose house is on fire, couldn't negotiate at all. So when the need is pressing, the negotiator is less effective. So give yourself lots of time to negotiate. Don't leave it to the last minute. You know, like the further out you book a hotel room, the lower rates you get. The further out you book an airline flight, the lower rates you get. Because as they get closer and closer to the flight, or closer and closer to the day, the hotels and the airlines become full and their rates go up and up and up. We sometimes book our tickets to Hawaii 8 months in advance. By the time we get there, the tickets are selling for twice as much and there aren't any available. But 8 months in advance, you can get incredible rates. So here's the rule with regard to deadlines, is whenever possible, set a deadline. What you do, as I said, this offer is open till 3 o'clock. This offer is open till 5 o'clock. You notice when you buy a piece of real estate, in the offer, it'll say this offer is open till 5 o'clock on a certain date or 12 o'clock noon. What you have to do is you have to put the person under pressure to make a buying decision. Now, people will always try to set deadlines. I've got to have an answer immediately. I've got to have an answer immediately. It's a very low-grade way of putting you under pressure. I worked with a very successful man many years ago who started with nothing and built an $800 million fortune, including about $500 million in real estate. He started with nothing. And I watched him negotiate. And whenever somebody tried to put a deadline on him, he'd say, well, that's very interesting, he said, but I think we'll think about it for a while. Now, I've got to know by noon tomorrow. He said, well, we're going to think about it over the weekend. And he would just simply ignore their deadlines. And they'd come back and they'd set a new deadline for noon on Monday. And he would just ignore the deadlines until finally they stopped using the attempt to pressure them into a sale. So with regard to decisions, here's another key negotiating technique is to delay. Put off decisions whenever possible. I bought my daughter a riding horse just the other day. They wanted $30,000 for the horse. We offered them $20,000 for the horse. They came back at $29,000 for the horse, and my daughter really wanted the horse. And I said, no, $29,000 is too much. I know that if you set a price at 30, you'd be willing to take 26. This is what I told the negotiator for the owner. I said, if you're willing to take 26 and I'm willing to offer 20, I saw off in the middle, I'll pay you 23, not a penny more. And so they went back and forth on the phone. They said, no deal, we're walking. And my daughter really, really wanted the horse. And we came home and my wife was upset and Catherine was crying. She really wanted the horse. I said, just be patient, just wait. So I said, fine. I told them, fine, the price is too much. We'll find another horse. Walked away. And we sat there and everybody's upset and they're mad at me because they don't understand it and it's just a matter of money. The phone rang and the owner had called back. He had blinked, if you like. He sold the horse to us at $23,000. And everybody was crying. I said, honey, you just got to be patient with these things. You've got to be prepared to just hang on, not allow people to pressure you and to delay a decision. And we saved something like, from his asking price of 30, saved $7,000. That's 25% of the price. And the horse was worth $30,000, by the way. I mean, the horse is a good horse. So put off decisions whenever you can. Give your other people deadlines, put them under deadlines, but don't you put yourself under a deadline. Now, the next thing about negotiating is developing options. Developing options improves your position. So whenever you go into a negotiation, have an option if it doesn't work out. Have a backup plan, what is called a plan B, so that if a person totally rejects it or the price is ridiculous and you can't buy it, always have something else to do. Because here's the rule, and it's a philosophical principle for success in life, is you are only as free as your options. You are only as free as your options. If you have no options, you have no freedom. Because why? It's because you're stuck. So therefore, develop options before you go into a negotiation. Always imagine that the worst thing that can happen here is that it doesn't work out at all. Always have a backup plan. That makes you a much stronger negotiator. You're much more confident. You never tell the other person that you have a backup plan, but they can sense that you are under no pressure to negotiate with them because you have lots of options. And you say, I've done a lot of research in the market. There's a lot of things available. There's a lot of choices. I'm really in no hurry to make this decision one way or another. That's giving you power, power, power. So number seven is know exactly what you want. Know exactly what you want. We say that preparation is the key to successful negotiating. And the key to preparation is for you to know exactly what you want before you go into a negotiation. Don't go into an auction and then raise your hand every single time the price goes up without giving any thought. What you do is you say, what outcomes do you desire from this negotiation? I remember once I was negotiating an office rental lease with a very, very sharp guy. I mean, very sharp. Good landowner, good tenant, good negotiator. And I knew that in order to get a good deal, I was going to have to be very smart. So I sat down and I wrote down 2 pages, everything that I wanted to get from this negotiation. And then I put myself in his shoes and I wrote down everything that he would want from this negotiation, knowing that he wanted to drill me, get me to take the lease for the longest period of time at the highest amount of money with the least amount of improvements. So what I did is I wrote it all down. So I was absolutely crystal clear. When I sat down with him, I said, this is exactly what I want. I said, and I know what you want, and this is what I want. and this is my minimum, this is my maximum. So this is my outcome. And we went back and forth, and I ended up getting a very good deal. But if I had just sat down with this guy, knowing him in retrospect, he would have eaten me alive. So always ask, what are you prepared to give? What are you prepared to pay? Like an auction, you go in and you say, this is the amount, maximum amount I'm going to pay for this item. If it goes beyond that price, you don't offer anymore. You walk away. If you're going to offer something for sale, you are very clear about the minimum amount that you'll take. If it goes below that price, you're prepared to walk. And if you're trying to buy something, you know your maximum price as well. So going back to preparation. Preparation is the key to success. There's a man named Robert Urey that wrote one of the best-selling books in negotiating. It's called Getting to Yes. It's based on the Harvard Negotiation Project. You don't need to read it because by the time you finish reading it, I will have told you everything in the next couple of minutes that's in it. He said, basically, in Getting to Yes, what you do is you stop and start, and before you begin negotiating, you ask, what are yours and what are his or her major concerns? In other words, what are the major concerns of this negotiation? You don't even talk about what you'll give and what you'll get and so on, just what are the concerns, and you write them down. Just like you're trying to get instructions to a person's house, you write them down. Your major concerns are this and this and this, and you write them down. You say, well, our major concerns are this and this and this. The price, the terms, the delivery, the size, the quality, the warranty, the guarantee, the follow-up, the performance, and so on. Write it down, write it down, write it down. You should have done this in advance so that it's very easy for you to tell them. Now, the second thing, you say, okay, here's our concerns. What are the issues to be resolved? And you always call them issues, not areas of disagreement. What are the issues? In other words, these are the key factors. If you're buying something, it's price. If you're selling something, it's price. But it may be something else. Gerald Nirenberg, who's a great writer on negotiation, says, if you can control the terms, you can have the other person dictate the price. So when you talk about issues, you could say the issues can be price and terms. He says, for example, you have a cross pen. Your cross pen is a gold cross pen. He said, I'll tell you what, I'll pay you $1,000 for that pen if I can dictate the terms. And then he says, now the terms are, is that I will give you a dollar every time I bump into you in Grand Central Station in New York when we're in there at the same time catching trains. Now what I'm pointing out is it's ridiculous because at that point you would never collect anything from it. So if you can dictate the terms, sometimes the terms are more important than the price. The person who dictates the terms sometimes controls the whole deal. I just bought a major piece of property, and it was really neat. The guy came to us. He said, this is how much I want for the property. I said, well, that's full market price and everything else. He said, but here's the deal. He said, you don't have to pay me for a year. I'll sign it over to you. We can have a separate addenda. You'll own the property. You can develop it. You can sell it out. You'll have no cost of property for a year. At the end of the year, for my tax purposes, you can then pay me. So basically, you'll have had free land to develop. We went to the bank with the ownership of the land in our pocket. The bank put up 100% of the development finance. We ended up developing 15 lots and homes without any money out of our own pocket. Why? It's because of the terms. So we could quite comfortably pay the price that he asked because we wouldn't have to pay it until it was at the back end of the deal when we had the profits. So what are the issues to be resolved? And then the next part of preparation is, what are the starting positions of each party? What are the starting positions of each party? And it's really key there that you suggest alternatives to the starting position. You notice, for instance, we just had this great big strike in California. 70,000 supermarket workers went out on strike. Well, the union came in, and at a time when the supermarkets are being eaten alive by fast food, new supermarkets, Walmart, non-unionized, these people wanted to increase their wages, increase pensions, increase medical benefits. They wanted increases, and the supermarket said, I'm sorry, the world has changed. We can't do it. They said, well, we want all these things, and we promised our membership. We said, well, we can't do it. They said, okay, then we'll break you. You've got to settle with us, because they've settled in the past. They said, nope. And so they went out on strike. They lost most of their membership. Their membership was all wiped out financially. They went off and got part-time jobs. They bankrupted their strike fund. They stayed on strike for several months. And when it was all over, the union sat down and accepted exactly what had been offered initially. So finding out the starting position is very important, because if the starting positions are ridiculous, not a lot you can do. And finally, in preparation, determine your maximums and your minimums. What's the most you will pay? What's the minimum you'll accept? Determine your maximums and minimums. And this leads us to another part of negotiating, which is called the law of four. And the law of four is based on an enormous amount of research that says that in any negotiation, there's only four issues to be resolved. There's one major issue and three small issues. Now, the reason that companies negotiate is because their major issues are different. They all have the same four issues, but for instance, you have major issue price, and then you have three smaller issues. Their major issue is sales volume to get the monthly quota, but it's not to get the maximum price for this particular item. So now you have an opportunity to negotiate. If both of you are stuck on the same issue, both of you want the maximum or minimum price, sometimes it's very hard to negotiate. But if you have identified what the four basic issues to be negotiated are, then you stick with those. I negotiated a multi-million dollar, multi-year real estate development contract with a municipality. And this is the second one that I did, so I knew how to do it. It was 3 days of negotiating all day long, myself and eight people. Me on one side of the table, eight of them on the other side of the table, the city manager, the mayor, the townspeople, the development officers, and everybody else. And I knew, because they had announced to the newspapers, that they were going to get $3 million in off-site improvement money from this developer in exchange for improvement. I knew that they had told everybody that, and they were, it's a small town, you know, a few thousand people, so everybody was watching to see how they were going to come out with this Sharpie negotiator from the big city. Well, I knew that was the big issue. So it was first thing on the 30-page negotiation. So I said, well, you know, there's no way we can give you that kind of money. There was no way we can proceed without it. I said, well, let's put it aside for now. And this is another technique. When you have a major issue, you put aside issues that you disagree on, and you go through the entire contract, and you agree on everything that you disagree on, and then you come back and you start over again with the areas that are still unresolved. Well, that was still a major area unresolved. So we went past it, and we settled all the other areas. Again, this is 3 days, 24 hours of negotiating, 8 hours a day. I knew what the critical issue was, and I knew that they had to get agreement. But now, on 50 issues, they had agreement on 49 issues. The only thing left was this $3 million off-site improvements. And I said, okay, we'll give you the $3 million. Oh, they were just ecstatic. They were high-fiving, smiling, beaming. They had made it. They could go back to their townspeople, go back to the voters and everything else. I said, however, I need to structure the terms. And the terms will be, we have something like 350 lots in this subdivision. What we'll do is we will pay you $10,000 per lot as we develop the lots as off-site improvements. So you'll get the money as you need it. We will give it to you as we get it. And they said, whoa. Of course, they wanted it all at once. I said, it's the only way we can do it. If we can't do this, then what we'll have to do is we just have to walk away from this entire agreement, 49 out of 50 which clauses have been developed, and there's no other developer. The whole thing will be dead. I didn't say this, but your reputations will be ruined. You'll look like duds and dumbos to the rest of the town, and so on. And if you ever deal with somebody else, you'll have the same thing. So they said, could I leave the room? I left the room, and they went back and forth, but half an hour they came in, and they're all smiling. They said, okay, we'll do it that way. And so they announced the town. We talked this big city developer out of $3.35 million. We got it, high five, banners, parties. They took me out for dinner to the best restaurant. Everybody celebrated, and the development was an extraordinary success. And we ended up, because we didn't have it. See, we didn't have the $3.35 million. So we ended up being able to pay them as we sold the land to a purchaser, and we just transferred the money to them one step at a time. So it enabled us to do some great business. There's some negotiating tactics that you can use. And this is especially if you're buying something or selling something, but especially if you're buying. If you're shopping in your life, you're buying a car, you're buying even a house, you're buying furniture, you're buying appliances, you're buying boats, cars, motorhomes, and so on. So here are the negotiating tactics that you can use. And remember, people are emotional, so they respond to emotions. The first of all is called the flinch. And the flinch is very powerful. When somebody gives you a price, you say, how much is that coat? They say, $500. You go, geez, ow, ow. I mean, like you just had angina pectoris, a heart attack, a stabbing pain in your stomach. You say, wow. And you look at the other person with you, and they look at you, wow, like you've both been electrically shocked. I mean, gee, that hurt when they give you the price. And very often when you flinch, they'll say, well, how about $400? I mean, sometimes the flinch will cause them to drop immediately. So what you do is you just show great pain, like you have this migraine headache in your face and the pain look in your face. If the price is soft, the price will budge. It'll start to move down. And remember, here's the rule. Never accept the first offer that is given. Never accept the first price. Never accept the first anything. Wherever there is a price concession, remember, there's more price concessions. One of the rules in negotiating, by the way, is try never to be the first person to make a concession. The first person to make the concession is very often the person who has to make the next concession. Here's another important point. If ever you have to make a concession of any kind, always ask for a reciprocal concession. Never give a free concession. For example, if you're selling something and the person says, well, if we could get it for slightly less, you say, well, I could give it to you for slightly less if you bought two of them and you took them with you personally rather than having us ship and deliver. or I could give it to you at that price, but only if you could pay cash immediately. In other words, always tie a concession to a concession. Never give away something free, because here's what happens. If you say, okay, we could come down $50 on that $500 item, they're automatically going to say, how about $400? Could you come down $50 more? If you don't charge them for the concession, and the concession could be, what you're asking for could be irrelevant. Delivery, pay cash, something else. Here's a very interesting way to make a sale. When a person offers you the price, you say, if you will give it to me at this price, I'll pay you cash right now. I'll write you a check right now. And each time I've gone to buy a car, sometimes even buy land, it's absolutely amazing. I'll give you cash. I don't have to arrange financing. I don't have to go to the bank. I can write you a check for cash. And you can keep the check until the check clears before you transfer ownership. But I can write you a check for cash. And I said, what? I say, I'll give you cash. And, you know, it doesn't make any difference because credit is the same to them. But when you offer cash, it often triggers a person into buying. So offer cash. That's a great concession for you. And often it will cause them to accept your deal. If you'll give it to me at this price, I'll give you cash. So try the flitch. That's great pain. Now, the second is the question. And you ask this question. It's very simple. You say, is that the best you can do? Is that the very best you can do? Is that the best price I can get on this? And you look them straight in the eye. You see, human beings don't lie. So they say, yes, that's the very best you can do. It's the very best price we have. So then you ask, has this item ever been on sale? Well, yes, as a matter of fact. Does it go on sale once a year, twice a year? Well, it's been on sale before. What is the lowest price you've ever sold it for on sale? And now you've got them. Because they'll have to tell you the truth. And they say, well, we had it on sale, we're clearance and everything else. You say, well, I didn't make the last clearance sale. I'd like to get it at that price. And I can pay you cash if you'll honor it at that price. And then you just go totally silent. Remember, the only pressure that you use in a negotiation, the main pressure is the silence after you've said or asked for something. So you say, could I get it at that price? Could I get it at a better price? Now, the third technique you can use is called the assertion. When they give you the price, you go, oh, you flinch. And you look at them and you say, geez, you know, I can get a much better price somewhere else. I can get a better deal somewhere else. Your competitor will sell it to me for less than this. And that really unnerves people. They say, really? I mean, who? And if you've done your homework, by the way, you could say, yes, I spoke to ABC Company. They sell the same one for $29.95. And you're asking $32.50. Now, there may be a difference, and you know there's a difference. What ABC has is not quite as good as this and so on. But when you have answers, you've got your expertise, you've done your research, you've got your information, and you say, I can get a better deal elsewhere. And sometimes that will cause them to break, and they say, well, I mean, you know, we want your business. And you say, well, here's a suggestion. Give it to me at this price, and I'll pay you cash, and we'll do a deal right now. And sometimes they'll say, well, okay. And sometimes the price can drop 5%, 10%, 15%, 20%, 25%. Absolutely amazing. Now, the third thing you can do is lowball. For instance, when you're buying furniture, you'll see this, by the way, if you want some practice in negotiating, go to flea markets or garage sales and get there early and negotiate. And you lowball everything. You recognize that anything anybody's selling at a garage sale is not worth more than 10 cents on the dollar that they paid. Sometimes they think it's worth more, so they're offering it for $10, offer $5. They're asking for $15, offer $5, or offer $7. Offer half price. Offer a ridiculous price. It's absolutely amazing how many people will sometimes take a ridiculous price because it's a bird in the hand. And if you take out a handful of cash at a garage sale or a handful of cash in a retail store, you've got a handful of cash sitting there or a credit card, and you say, I'll give you half price. I'll give you this much for it. I'll give you an example. I met a gentleman who lives in Phoenix, and he buys real estate, and he heard about buying real estate for no money down, and he heard that the key was finding a motivated buyer. And you had to talk to a lot of buyers before you found one who was really motivated to sell. Death, divorce, bankruptcy, firing, eager to get out of the house. So he would simply go around to people at houses for sale, and he'd knock on the door, always personally, and he'd say, hello. He said, I'd like to buy your house, and I see you're asking $100,000. He said, I'll give you $50, and I'll give you $50 cash right now. And he said he got a lot of angry doors slammed in his face. He got people swearing at him. He got dogs sicked on him. Sometimes they turned on the sprinkler system when he was walking out. He said, but out of every 100 houses, he buys one. He said he now owns about 75 houses. He buys them at 50 to 60%. Sometimes they counter offer at 60, 70%. But he knows what they're worth because he's done his research. He's got a banker who will put the mortgage on it. So he gets an 80% mortgage on a $60,000 house. He cleans it up, rents it out, puts $10,000, $20,000 in his pocket. The renter pays for the cost of all carrying charges, plus a profit. He owns about 50, 60 houses. He didn't finish high school. He's got no great skills, but he has one skill. He just goes out and offers lowball prices. And he's absolutely astonished If he just keeps doing it, somebody will accept his offer. Now, the next technique is silence. When a person gives you a price, don't respond. It'd be almost like you went deaf, like you can't hear a word. You can do a little flinch if you like. You can flinch. You can look at your friend. You can look back, and you just look at them as though what they said was such an incredible price, it's taking your breath away. You can't respond. I've had people say, well, don't you have anything to say? Like in buying the car, don't you have anything to say? And I said, no, I have nothing to say. I just can't respond to your offer. Your offer is just so ridiculous. I just have no words to respond to it. And she goes running out of the office and back down to the sales manager. And you see them shouting at each other and coming back. And my sales manager really wants to do a deal and everything else. And so we're willing to do this. And I just look at it. And I look at her and I say, well, we'll be going now. Goodbye. She said, well, you can't leave. Why can't I leave? I made you an offer. You turned it down. Offer and acceptance. Offer and rejection. Bye-bye. I'll buy it somewhere else. Well, no, wait here. This went on and on. Most amazing darn thing. Okay, the last technique you use is what is called the nibble. And the nibble is called the add-on. So when you buy something, you say, just before you sign the credit card, you say, by the way, this includes shipping and delivery, doesn't it? Or this includes a one-year extended warranty, doesn't it? Or if you're buying clothes, well, this includes a blouse or a tie with it, doesn't it? In other words, you ask for something else at the moment of signing. And you pose your pen over the credit card slip or the check, and you look at them, and if they say no, just drop the pen. You say, well, you know, if you're not willing to go a little, maybe I'll just think about it for a while. And they say, whoa, because think about it means goodbye forever. It means you're on your way. Says, I'll think about it for a while. Oh, well, wait a second, just a second. Let me talk to somebody. And it's absolutely amazing how much more you can get by just asking at the last minute. Okay, two final points on negotiating, and then we'll throw the lines open. The next is what I call the walk-away method of negotiating. Now, this is one of the most important things you'll ever learn, and it's this, is you'll never be able to negotiate well on your own behalf until you know that you can walk away if you don't get the right price and terms. So, therefore, always be willing to walk away. Always be willing, like in the car sale, to just get up and walk out. And you don't have to be nasty. You don't have to be angry. And somebody said, what if you really, really want it? Well, don't worry. You can always walk back. Just get your ego under control. Just see if it works. Just walk away. I remember once I was in a Mexican market, and I was with a lovely young woman, and she wanted this gold necklace. And we negotiated back and forth and back and forth and back and forth from $100 down to about $40. I'd give him $30 because I knew there wasn't very much gold in it, and she really wanted it. And she had this look on her face, and I wanted to get it for her. But he had this look on his face like the price was still soft. We were down to $40. He said, no. He said, I won't sell it for less than $40. And I said, I'll give you $30. He said, no, only 40. I said, 30, 40, 30, 40. I said, okay, fine. I said, well, thank you very much. And he looked at her, and he knew she really wanted it. And he thought he had me, you know, pressure, emotion, desire, and so on. So I said, fine. I said, okay, let's go, honey. Oh, please, let's not. It's only the. I said, no, let's go. So I took her by the arm, and I walked away. But I walked down the street, and I walked away so that I knew he could see my back. And I kept walking down the street. I walked a full block without turning around. And at that moment, he broke and came running after me all the way down the street and said, okay, I'll sell it for $30. I never forgot that. The walk-away method of negotiation is very powerful. There was a story about a walkout in the Israeli Knesset, the parliament. The opposition parties were arguing back and forth, and one side of the party stood up, and all of them got up, and they said, we're finished, this is over, and they walked out of the room. And one of the reporters that was following this said, does this mean the negotiations are over? And one of the other politicians says, no, he said, walking out is just another way of negotiating. And sure enough, they walked out, and then they sent someone back and said, look, I'm trying to get these guys to come back. He said, can you give me anything to help me? And they said, well, so they go, and then they all came back, and they continued negotiating. So walking away is just a method of negotiating, and you never know the lowest price until you get up and walk away. Until you get up and walk away, you never know the lowest price. So here's the final point, and remember this, no negotiation is ever final. And we talked about the Chinese method of negotiating. Imagine a cloud around your negotiating contract rather than hard edges. And with new information, ask the person to reopen the negotiation. If you get new information that makes it appear unattractive to you, then reopen the negotiation. Say, you know, I've learned something new and I'd like to change what we've agreed to. I have reopened multi-million dollar negotiations, and it's been absolutely extraordinary because what I found is this. What goes around comes around. And so they've come back to me and they say, oh my God, we didn't realize this is a major problem in a development agreement that covers the development of half a city. And there's something we didn't include in everything else. And we've got a signed agreement and now we're obligated. And I say, I'll tell you what, let's just add an addendum to the contract. I'll get it signed and sealed. No problem. They said, would you do that? you don't have to do that, you know. I mean, you've got us. And I said, no, we'll do that because I want you to be happy. Because you know what happens? As sure as God made little green apples somewhere down the road, something else is going to come up. You're going to find out something that you didn't know about. And you go back to them and say, you know, I have a real challenge here. I need your help. And they look at it and they say, absolutely, we'll just write an addendum to the agreement. So remember, what goes around comes around. When you get new information, offer to reopen the negotiation. Your bottom line is, in a negotiation, in business, everybody should be happy. If you're buying a product or a service, it doesn't matter if the other person is happy. If that's personal negotiating, but in business negotiation, the person should be happy, and so happy that they like you and they're willing to negotiate with you and to interact with you over and over again for the indefinite future. Remember this in negotiating, everything is negotiable, and the key is to ask. Become so good at asking and so fluent at asking and so unconcerned about rejection, and ask, ask again, ask politely, ask kindly, ask expectantly, ask courteously, ask and walk away, stand silently when you get the answer, but don't be afraid to ask, and you'll end up negotiating the best deals of your life for all your life. Now, I'd like to give you a free gift as a way of saying thank you for being a loyal supporter of mine and a determined, continuous learner. So, find out what I've been working on lately and receive your special at www.briantracy.com/learner. That's www.briantracy.com/learner. Just go there right now and see what I've got for you. Thanks again for listening. I look forward to talking to you and maybe even seeing you soon.